Blog Talk Radio.
I was toting my pack along the dusty Winnemucca Road, when along came a semi with a high-end canvas-covered load. If you're going to Winnemucca, Mac, with me you can ride. And so I climbed into the cab and then I settled down inside. He asked me if I'd seen a road with so much dust and sand, and I said, listen, I've traveled every road in this here land. I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere, man. Across the deserts bare, man. I breathe the mountain air, man. I travel, I've had my share, man. I've been everywhere.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, I think we're on the air. We're not sure what happened tonight, but that's never happened before. But as soon as the show connected, it shut off immediately. So there's some help coming on the way, but we'll see. We'll see what happens. See how it goes. Let's see what happens. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, I think we're on the air. I certainly apologize. That's never happened before, but we have delayed about almost a half hour now, and I had guests tonight that we're going to take up about three, that we're going to take up about 40 minutes, but we'll go ahead and pick up and start with the show, and Audrey, why don't you go ahead and introduce us.
It's time for the next edition of the Riveting Jumble Justice Radio Show, broadcast worldwide on Blog Talk Radio. Turn up your speakers and listen closely since you may be asked questions later. Keep your phone handy, since we encourage you to call in your comments to the host and guests on today's show. The listener call-in number is 347-996-5983. Once again, the number is 347-996-5983. You will also find the number on the top of the homepage for the Jumble Justice Radio Show. I'm Audrey, your technical and spiritual advisor for the radio broadcast. And now, without further delay, allow me to introduce your eminently qualified and inspiring host for Jumble Justice, Professor Keith Haley.
Well, Audrey, thank you very much, and Emily and Mike, and thank you folks for not going home. But we had a first ever problem with Blog Talk Radio tonight. I called in and got on the switchboard, and in a minute when the show went live, it disconnected me, and it said to call back in, and I called back in four or five times, and I could not get on, although it said that I was on. And then I went to the live help, and Shannon D. Plugged in there and helped, and she says, yes, she says, we have a big problem, and she shifted that over to their 911 number, and Shannon and those folks fixed it. So here we are back. With a lot of time cut short and about a half hour left to go on the show. But what we're going to do tonight is spend a lot of time. In fact, we're going to spend 2 weeks on the issue of surveillance in society, both public and private. We're going to try to figure out how much is too much and how much is the right amount, since that is such a major phenomenon in our society right now. But anyway, you're on Blog Talk Radio. If you're listening for the first time, I know I had a caller on there just not too long ago, and they've dropped off. But you're on the service that allows you to broadcast worldwide and streaming audio without any cost to you. So if you want to get your own show, go ahead and sign up for that. And what we try to do each week on the show is spend some time on news issues, events, and developments in the always interesting and changing field of criminal justice. And we dedicate our show to those professionals who work in police, courts, corrections, and juvenile justice lines of work. And we try to look inside criminal justice and at its professionals and at its practice. And we've had a lot of fun doing that over the past year. And again, I apologize for this major delay here tonight. What we're going to do is spend the next 2 weeks, and I don't think I'll be able to play or have our guests work tonight, but we're going to spend 2 weeks on the issue of surveillance in society. And tonight would have been a good setup night because I was going to play an interview with for you with three major folks that have actually worked in this particular area in terms of research and protest and some other things, and it's very interesting. So what I'm going to do is save that that clip for next week. It's about actually about 40 minutes, but it would have been a marvelous setup for our discussion tonight. But if you want to call in and talk about some of these articles I'm going to talk about, I think that's probably the logical way to finish this tonight and maybe talk a little bit about one of the books on this important subject of surveillance in society. But we'll start off like we usually do with something in the news, and a few of these stories will have to do actually with surveillance and surveillance cameras in our society. But I thought this was an odd one starting off tonight in terms of odd news. Sometimes you can be mistaken, and your behavior can be mistaken, that's for sure. And that, again, will we'll link up more than remotely with our topic for tonight. But Stephen King was in Australia, and he walked into an Australian bookshop. And apparently some authors do this, but they'll go to the bookshelves where their books are stored, or with his, it certainly would be the current one. Who knows how many he has. And they'll start pulling these books off the shelf, and they'll start signing their signature, their autograph, on the inside cover. And one of the patrons saw Stephen King doing this and mistakenly thought that he was defacing the book, so they called the clerk, and Stephen King done, and he's out and down the walk, and they catch him in a supermarket where he's in there buying fruits and vegetables, and the clerk actually recognized him, and she thanked him for actually coming in and signing their book. She said this is kind of a normal occurrence, at least at big bookstores in major cities. If authors are visiting, they will come in and sign their books, and that's a nice thing for authors to do. And someone that's buying a book, then they get an autographed copy without having to send in that through the mail, which is a lot more complicated and sometimes doesn't work. I think I tried that once, actually. Well, here's a story tonight in the news that dated August 14th, pretty recent. And it's talking about what's going on at the airports now. And, you know, if you haven't flown lately, then you certainly have missed an experience. But I don't think it's going to get any better. But, you know, you've got all these complications of going through security. And security checks actually start long before you get to that security check line where they have you take off your shoes and et cetera. But here's what's going on. There are new airport security agents who are actually studying the flyers, you as a passenger, me as a passenger, our facial expressions. And listen to what's going on here. Specially trained security personnel are watching body language and facial cues of passengers for signs of bad intentions. The watcher could be the attendant who hands you the tray for your laptop, the one standing behind the ticket checker. Hope it's not the one that several years ago when I had one of the first tablet PCs out that they took me in a room and kept me for about 45 minutes in Denver because no one had ever seen a tablet PC for before. So not exactly a high-tech group, at least that one wasn't. But what these officers are called, are you ready for this? These are behavior detection officers, and they're part of several recent security upgrades in the airport. And Kip Howley, he's the Transportation Security Administrator, he told an aviation industry group, he described them as wonderful tools to be able to identify and do risk management prior to someone coming into the airport or approaching the crowded security point. Now, listen to some of this. The officers are working in more than a dozen airports already in the United States, and what they're going to be doing, they're specialists, and they're called behavior detection officers, and they hope to have 500 of them working pretty soon. At the heart of this new screening system is a theory that when people try to conceal their emotions, they reveal their feelings in flashes that are called micro-expressions. Fear and disgust are the key ones, he said, because they're associated with deception. So when you're going through the line, they'll now be looking at you to see if you're exhibiting any fear and disgust, and that will be an indicator to these people that you'll be. Now, I won't go on and talk about these psychologists that have been doing this research for about 30 years. I wish some of these same psychologists, if they're that specific about knowing what to do about human behavior, maybe they could go to work in a prison and rehabilitate some prisoners where we know that more than 50% of the people that are in prison today have been there before. So something is not working. But a behavior specialist may decide to move in to help suspicious passengers recover belongings that have passed through the baggage. In other words, they're going to fake it and act like they're helping you. What they're really doing is looking for some micro-expression. Now, how much training do you think somebody would go through that would be doing this kind of delicate work that might call out, you know, other security personnel based on their assessment? Well, they've been trained 16 hours in behavior assessment or micro-expression assessment. And I was thinking, could we just get a police officer who's been on the street for about 16 years? I think they sort of engage in micro-expression analysis, too, once in a while. But I'm just really kind of amazed. And by the way, they're going to be adding security cameras to this, and they're going to be trying to do this micro-expression analysis through security cameras. So kind of an interesting idea. Now, there's another thing that's going on, too. We're now going to be doing lip reading with some of these security cameras, and what they're going to do is trying to figure out if you're using words that would indicate that you are a terrorist or someone that's going to cause trouble in the airport. So it's going to be, they'll pick up the audio, and then this software will read what you said. And what it'll analyze what you said, and I think you need to be careful with words like, this is the weirdest movie I've ever seen, if you're talking about that going up to the checkpoint, because they might interpret weirdest as terrorist or something like that, and it'll call out, 50 agents with guns or something like that. But I find this absolutely incredible, and the Secretary of Homeland Security for Science and Technology said in May that he wants to automate passenger screening by using video cams and cameras to measure and analyze, are you ready, heartbeat, respiration, body temperature, and verbal responses, as well as facial micro-expressions. So let me just mention that again. You're now going to be checked for your heartbeat, your respiration, your body temperature, and your verbal responses. So if you took a little walk up and down the airport concourse in order to exercise a little bit before you got on the plane, like a 12-hour flight, your heartbeat might be a little bit accelerated, and somebody's going to read that as something suspicious. George Orwell, Where Are You? 1984, Big Brother, and a lot of other people apparently are watching us now. But isn't that kind of an odd thing that this would be going on? Now, I'm a little out of sequence because I wanted to set you up with this 40-minute set of interviews tonight, but I think I'll go ahead and comment on some of the things I was going to mention to start with. And I think Audrey, she has a real interesting piece of news about what China is doing in this regard that was just came out in the news this week. But as I think about this surveillance in society, and it's public, private, it's on streets, it's in buildings, it's in restaurants, it's in it's in clothing stores, it's in it's ubiquitous. It's about every place that you can think of that this is going on. And as I think about this, I wonder how far we can go. And months ago, I mentioned something about this just in a news story. My first attention that I paid to this, I knew it went on, was when I went into the restroom at McDonald's in a city not too far from where I live. And in that city, or in that restroom, there were a little tiny audio monitors up in the corner telling me that I was going to be audio monitored. And I couldn't think of a real good reason why they would be doing that in the restroom, unless they're checking up their own employees or, people come in and hide in the restroom and do all sorts of things, but whatever. But I thought that was a little odd, and it gave me a little second thought about what I was doing in there. What bothers me also about this subject that I've been tracking for about 3 years is the faith that we have in our government agencies. Yes, you can't find anyone probably more pro-police than I am. I've been the head of a state law enforcement commission for 5 years and really liked the job and met wonderful people at all levels and ranks in law enforcement and related fields. But the faith, the blind faith that people put in government agents, and these have to be people that haven't looked at the record. And next week I'll be giving you some of the websites where you can go and get documented cases of abuses concerning the audio and video surveillance. And, we even now have concealed cameras on the shirts of police officers in a few cities in the United States where they're taping you and you don't know them. Now, the point about it always is, well, if you're not doing anything wrong, what makes the difference? And that perhaps is the most troublesome issue to me. If you're not doing anything wrong, what makes the difference? They say that you don't have any right to privacy in public. I contest that idea. I think we do have a right to privacy. If you go back and look at the American Revolution and the history of what led up to the American Revolution, the key issue were those things that had to do with the Fourth Amendment. Americans wanted to live in a society where they were free. The society was free. It was open. In other words, you could go anywhere you want and pass by rich and poor together, etc. And it was also anonymous. In other words, anonymity was a big part of this life that we enjoy today, and certainly in the past. And that was the British soldiers carried writs of assistance. They could enter your home, they could stop you in the street, they could do whatever they wanted to check you out. And we were not unique in the world, but it was rare in the world that in the United States you never had to carry ID. In other words, you could be anonymous unless police officers had reasonable suspicion that you were involved in some type of crime. With suspicion, they could stop and do a field interrogation, but if nothing higher than that came up on the proof continuum, you actually had the right to walk away. And this is just recent. Now, with the pervasive fear of terrorism, at least the mantra that we sing about terrorism, we don't have that right. And some of these states themselves have slipped through in their own versions of Patriot Acts that police officers can stop and ask you for identification now with not one scintilla of evidence of any wrongdoing. And I'm not saying that they're going to abuse that, but you know it's going to happen. And it just goes so much against our society in terms of how it was set up to be free, open, and anonymous. So there was an implied common law right to privacy. We could move about free and open and be anonymous on our streets, in our side streets, in our parks whatsoever. And now we're losing that at a pace. And what bothers me, it doesn't seem like a whole lot of people care. And again, it doesn't fit well in a 14-second soundbite. And that's why I wanted to play these interviews with you, which we'll do next week. It helps you set it up. But Audrey, you've got an interesting little story here about what's going on in China, and I think we have time to go ahead and listen to that. So I think I'll go ahead and play that, and we'll have some comments, and maybe we'll have time for your blonde joke. We certainly don't want to do a show without doing that.
August the 12th, 2007, China enacting high-tech plan to track people, by Keith Bradshaw. Shenzhen, China, August 9, at least 20,000 police surveillance cameras are being installed along streets here in southern China, and will soon be guided by sophisticated computer software from an American-financed company to recognize automatically the faces of police suspects and detect unusual activity, starting this month in a port neighborhood, and then spreading across Shenzhen, a city of 12.4 million people, residency cards fitted with powerful computer chips programmed by the same company will be issued to most citizens. Data on the chip will include not just the citizen's name and address, but also work history, educational background, religion, ethnicity, police record, medical insurance status, and landlord's phone number. Even personal reproductive history will be included for enforcement of China's controversial one-child policy. Plans are being studied to add credit histories, subway travel payments, and small purchases charged to the card.
What else? What else?
Security experts describe China's plans as the world's largest effort to meld cutting-edge computer technology with police work to track the activities of the population and fight crime. But they say the technology can be used to violate civil rights. The Chinese government has ordered all large cities to apply technology to police work and to issue high-tech residency cards to 150 million people who have moved to a city but not yet acquired permanent residency. Both steps are officially aimed at fighting crime and developing better controls on an increasingly mobile population, including the nearly 10 million peasants who move to big cities each year. But they could also help the Communist Party retain power by maintaining tight controls on an increasingly prosperous population at a time when street protests are becoming more common. If they do not get the permanent card, they cannot live here, they cannot get government benefits, and that is a way for the government to control the population in the future, said Michael Lin, the Vice President for Investor Relations at China Public Security Technology, the company providing the technology. Incorporated in Florida, China Public Security has raised much of the money to develop its technology from two investment funds in Plano, Texas, Pinnacle Fund and Pinnacle China Fund, three investment banks, Roth Capital Partners in Newport Beach, California, Oppenheimer & Company in New York, and First Asia Finance Group of Hong Kong helped raise the money.
Well, I used to work in Plano, so I know that area.
Shenzhen, a computer manufacturing center next to Hong Kong, is the first Chinese city to introduce the new residency cards. It is also taking the lead in China in the large-scale use of law enforcement surveillance cameras, a tactic that would have drawn international criticism in the years after the Tiananmen Square killings in 1989. But rising fears of terrorism have lessened public hostility to surveillance cameras in the West. This has been particularly true in Britain, where the police already install the cameras widely on lamp poles and in subway stations, and are developing face recognition software as well.
Well, that's what Bentham thought.
New York police announced last month that they would install more than 100 security cameras to monitor license plates in Lower Manhattan by the end of the year. Police officials also said they hope to obtain financing to establish links to 3,000 public and private cameras in the area by the end of next year. No decision has been made on whether face recognition technology has become reliable enough to use without the risk of false arrests. Shenzhen already has 180,000 indoor and outdoor closed-circuit television cameras owned by businesses and government agencies, and the police will have the right to link them on request into the same system as the 20,000 police cameras, according to China Public Security.
Absolutely incredible, isn't it?
Some civil rights activists contend that the cameras in China and Britain are a violation of the right of privacy contained in the International Covenant on Civil and Political Rights. Large-scale surveillance in China is more threatening than surveillance in Britain, they said when told of Shenzhen's plans. I don't think they are remotely comparable, and even in Britain it's quite controversial, said Dinah Poe Kempner, the general counsel of Human Rights Watch in New York. China has fewer limits on police power, fewer restrictions on how government agencies use the information they gather, and fewer legal protections for those suspected of crime.
Well, it sounds like China's going to be leading in terms of the race to get the most surveillance cameras. I think we have a caller on the line here. We'll go ahead and pick them up, Audrey, and we'll pick up your joke here in just a moment. And again, I'm sorry to cut you short in that article, but we'll get the gist of most of that next week. Hello, who is this on Blog Talk Radio?
Professor Haley, this is Rick from Northwest Ohio.
That's Rick, how are you?
I'm doing great.
We're having a bad time here on Blog Talk Radio, the first time in the history of the Jumbo Justice Radio Show. And they actually labeled it as a 911 problem.
Wow.
That's what my live help said. And they sent that thing up to 911, and by golly, it took them, you know, it took them about 15 or 20 minutes, but they got it fixed. So
okay,
that's incredible. Wow.
Well, I was hoping that it wasn't somebody called in.
No, it wasn't anyone that called in.
Okay.
Jimmy.
All right. Now, on the topic tonight, would you mind if I be I hate to say this term, a devil's advocate tonight?
Okay, go ahead.
And just pose this question, when folks are boarding a plane, wouldn't you like to know that you're safe on that plane when it's up in the air, and that the police have done everything they can to make it certain that a terrorist hasn't boarded that plane? And then with your topic, and I'll let you go ahead and respond.
Okay, what's everything? I mean, why don't we... why don't we surveil people? Why don't we strip them naked, as some want to do? They want to use the cameras that look right through your clothes.
Okay. What about the, as you were talking about the cameras viewing your facial expressions?
Yeah. I don't know how many people you've looked at, but I can't read people that well, can you?
No.
I mean, sometimes people ask me, how do you feel? I tell them, I feel great.
So basically what will happen is, I'm assuming, that when they pick up someone that doesn't pass the test, they're going to take that person off to the side and check them out a little more. Am I correct, or will that person actually miss their plane?
Some of this, now keep in mind, these behavior specialists have had 16 hours of training.
Yeah.
That's about five and a half months less than a police officer gets.
Well, it sounds like it would open up a lot of positions, job positions for people in, graduating in forensic psychology, for example. Sounds like a great position for those folks.
You know, I have a wonderful article that was published on August 7th, written by a former congressional representative, Bob Barr, who was also a United States attorney. Before, and Bob Barr, of course, is a very conservative. He has a wonderful story about England. And, you know, British philosopher Bentham, he had this idea in the 18th and early part of the 19th century that you could control society. The society was riddled with crime in Great Britain. And he said that the actual fear of being surveilled would control society, not the idea of being surveilled. And an example of that is we actually know there are places and used to be places where there are surveillance cameras up there, but they don't have any guts in them.
Mm-hmm.
They just make you think that you're being surveilled when, in fact, you're not. And we know that thousands of these cameras in the United States are not even monitored.
Mm.
They're not monitored whatsoever. In other words, they don't even look at them unless there's been some type of crime. Then they go back and try to go through the tapes. And did you know that the International Association of Chiefs of Police, I'm sure with some of our money, have opened up three forensic video laboratories because of this? I even suggested if a school wanted to get on top of this right now, they would offer a video surveillance or a surveillance technology management degree.
Mm-hmm. Let me ask you this here. Would those cameras that aren't actually being viewed or maybe don't even work, would that be a similar situation as a sheriff's car sitting in a town with a dummy in it?
It would be the same thing, but I think what's happening is that, I wanted to talk about cost of some of these tonight. I have a very detailed article about the millions of dollars, just like 22 of these cameras. Will cost millions of dollars.
Mm-hmm.
Cincinnati tried that. They couldn't even get anybody to watch them. They had that volunteer program. Sounded like a really neat idea.
Mm-hmm.
Volunteers, and they had to come either to the company that ran the program or to the police station, district station, to monitor. And eventually it fell through. I'm trying to make some contact with the person that heads that up down there, but can you imagine, we're now funding three laboratories in the United States, New Bedford, Fort Worth, Texas, and Cincinnati, and then there's a laboratory for testing all this at the University of Indianapolis, video surveillance. So if we get to the point where all this public space, which people say you don't have any right to privacy in, is surveilled continuously, at least we think it is, then we don't have any freedom, do we?
Mm-hmm. Let me ask you that there in the bathrooms. You were saying that they might put cameras in the bathrooms if they're not already there already. Would that be in the personal stalls, shooting at the urinals and everything else?
I can give you some detailed accounts on notboard.com. If you go to that, it's notboard.com or org. Hold on a second. Well, you can Google it or Yahoo it, whatever you want. But it'll give you examples of these cases. In fact, I have students that have told me this week that they found out that they were being watched as they changed clothes in a clothing store.
Mm.
That they actually saw the little mark on the mirror show that they were actually being surveilled. And these are astute people. But I guess under this rubric of, this guise of Homeland Security protection, I think the best example of something that was disgusting that I saw was in Germany. And they had an 80-plus-year-old Romanian woman in a wheelchair. And they came with long sticks with microphones and sensors underneath and moved her around, stood her up, took her blankets off, and the woman was just crying. She was terrified.
Mm-hmm.
Was the person that we were looking for that was you know, coming through to carrying a bomb to blow up an airplane? I don't think so.
Well, I just give you an idea. I was wondering if they're already using these techniques. I took my family to the Ohio State Fair, and as you know, when you get into the Ohio State Fair, it's right across the street from the State Highway Patrol, and they staff the fair during that time. Everyone was required to go through a metal detector to get into the Ohio State Fair. And do you know that I had my two children in a double-wide, what do you call them, cart, and I had all kinds of belongings, you know, underneath the cart. And do you know that they didn't require the two children in the cart or any of the any part of the cart to go through the metal detector? And I was wondering if they were using the techniques already by looking at my facial expressions, because I noticed that the State Highway Patrolman did give me a lot of eye contact, in fact, stared at me and asked me if I had any bazookas, literally, bazookas, guns, and he rattled them off, knives or anything else like that, hand grenades, and other things like that.
Oh, yeah. Well, wait till I look in my pocket and hand him 6 or 7, right?
But I was surprised, though, that he didn't make my children or the cart go through the metal detector. They weren't checked at all.
But don't you think it's kind of absurd?
Yeah, it is a little bit absurd. I mean, well, why even bother, you know, with the metal detector?
At the airport, we're checking everybody in order to be politically correct.
Yeah.
We don't want to focus out, and maybe this is you know, they've used these profilers in Europe all the time. You walk up and talk to a guy at the stand and or a woman, and they talk to you for, you know, 3 minutes and decide whether you're up or not.
Well, what was funny about the metal detectors, and which makes me believe now, I wonder if they were even plugged in, is that you did not have to remove any of your keys or any metal, you didn't have to take your shoes off or anything to go through a metal detector as you would the airport. And so it was simply walking through there, which may, I'm serious, they might not have even been working. And then you actually had to listen, talk to a State Highway Patrolman. This is to get into the Ohio State Fair.
Right. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
But this is the guys that were doing all this to protect from terrorist incidents. And you've heard me say it probably before, but can we protect against everything? Can we protect every church, every school, every synagogue, every child?
Well, here's my point on that. I mean, we can't even protect our border. But I'll tell you one thing. Nobody's going to blow up a cow at the Ohio State Fair.
And, again, I don't think we have a plan yet. You know, like a lot of these federal Homeland Security, they sit around and have all these meetings and plans and come up with an acronym for a plan for this. I don't think – have you thought about the toothpaste supply? If they get to the toothpaste supply.
Well, they already have. China's sending it over contaminated.
But you get my point. The answer is offense, not defense.
Well, what's happening is we're basically getting closer to my, for those who believe, into the end times that, you know, eventually it will be a computer chip in your forehead or your wrist.
Well, this article in the Boston Globe today said that, you know, Homeland Security is now funneling millions of dollars to local governments for purchasing these high-tech video cameras, accelerating the rise of a surveillance society. And when I talk about Bob Barr's article next week, he's brilliant in this article. He's talking about how, you know, Tony Blair's greatest legacy is not going to be being President Bush's ally and being in Iraq with the United States and other nations. It's going to be that he made them the most surveilled society in the world.
Mm.
But Mayor Bloomberg wants to have, and his police chief, Commissioner Ray Kelly, they're absolutely obsessed with these cameras.
Mm.
And they want these cameras everywhere, and they're not spending their money for it. That's the bad part about it. They're spending ours.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, this is only iteration one. These things have to be maintained. The material has to be stored. They have to be improved. They become dated. You know, you all of a sudden you'll be on the trailing edge of surveillance camera technology, right?
Mm-hmm.
And how much can we spend for this? Let alone doing to people to walk around thinking that everywhere they go, everywhere they sit, they're being watched and they're being listened to. And these restaurants are doing this now. Restaurants doing this under the guise that they're improving service by hearing you gripe when the server walks away.
And that's why you'll see a waitress or a waiter come out right away then.
Yeah, uh-huh. I think so.
Well, it's a good way of communicating with the kitchen, isn't it?
You know, I had, I had coffee with, in fact, I had lunch with a faculty member yesterday out of town, and I was surprised at Bob Evans Restaurant. It has very good coffee. I hadn't been in one in a very long time. When you got ready to go, they asked if you wanted a take-home cup.
Oh, yes.
And they came up with a great big cup. I've never had a place ever do that.
Nice service.
Yes, very nice, and their coffee is really special. I don't know if you've ever drank much of it, but I drink it at home. So I guess that's an ad for Bob Evans, right?
Well, Mr. Haley, I just want to remind you got about one more minute, I think, for your show, so I'll be quiet and let you finish up.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you for coming on, and again, I apologize to you and everyone else for our technological problems tonight, but we came on just like we always did, and they had some type of goof-up, but at least they got on it and fixed it. That's something, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, thank you very much. We'll talk with you later.
Well, can you continue on with your show if nobody else comes on, or?
Right. Yeah, right. I sure can. Okay. We'll talk with you later then.
All right. Thank you.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Audrey, I think you got time to get your joke out. You want to do it? You do? We can do it. Here we go. This one I like.
Professor Haley, here's a blonde joke about a car accident she had. But don't worry, she was not hurt.
That's good.
A blonde had just totaled her car in a horrific accident. Miraculously, she managed to pry herself from the wreckage without a scratch, and was applying fresh lipstick when the state trooper arrived. My God, the trooper gasped. Your car looks like an accordion that was stomped on by an elephant. Are you okay, ma'am? Yes, officer, I'm just fine, the blonde chirped. Well, how in the world did this happen? The officer asked as he surveyed the wrecked car. Officer, it was the strangest thing, the blonde began. I was driving along this road, when from out of nowhere this tree pops up in front of me. So I swerved to the right, and there was another tree. I swerved to the left and there was another tree. Swerved to the right and there was another tree. I swerved to the left and there was. I am sorry to tell you this, ma'am, the officer said, cutting her off. There isn't a tree on this road for 30 miles. That was your car air freshener swinging back and forth.
Okay, that's one of the best ones you've had. I think we'll put that one up in the top shelf and maybe use it later. Maybe.
Hello. Hello.
Hello.
Hello.
Hello.
Yes,
I just called in my host dial-in number to do my show, and someone's already here.
Blog Talk Radio is having a lot of problems tonight. I'll sign off immediately, sir.
Oh, if you had a show going, I don't want to interrupt.
We're over. It took us 20 minutes to get on the air. First time that's happened in about a year since I started.
Oh, it's been happening to me the last 2 weeks.
Is that right?
Yeah, well, they're supposed to be redoing the system next month, so hopefully they'll fix it.
Well, they
you do.
They did get on the help and fix it. Who are you?
My name's Dave. I do the Open Mind Discussion Show, one of the paranormal shows.
Oh, okay. All right,
What
great.
Show do you do?
I do one called Jumble Justice. It's an inside look at criminal justice practice, police courts, corrections, etc.
Oh, awesome. Well, what's your name?
Keith Haley.
Hi, Keith. Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you, sir. I'll get off the air and let you go for the show. This is kind of like Blog Talk Radio, isn't it?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Hopefully we'll get it fixed. Okay.
Good night.
Take care, Keith.
Bye.
Well, welcome to the world of Blog Talk Radio. Hi, this is Dave doing the Open Mind Discussion Show. We do it every Thursday night at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. I guess tonight, one of my, I like to say my oldest friends from, like, when I started getting interested in the paranormal online last year really deep, Teresa Racer and Steve Wade from my eyesight is going, I'm getting old, Huntington, West Virginia, the Huntington Paranormal Investigative Research Society, he gets it out. All right. Are you guys
Hello.
On?
Hi there.
Hey. I hate Blog Talk.
Yeah, what's that all about?
Are we going to throw me off the air for saying that?
Hey, there's always Sam Broadcaster.
Oh, yeah. I got to try something. The last 3 weeks I've been pulling my hair out. But I got you guys on, so how you doing?
Oh, I'm doing good. I'm doing pretty good. How are you doing this evening?
Oh, hanging in. I just walked in the door from work and run. But doing good. Glad to be back. So tell us a little bit about yourselves. Like your website, mention the name of the group, everything.
Right,
go ahead,
you
Teresa.
Can start.
Go ahead, Teresa. Go ahead.
Okay. Like you said, we're Huntington Paranormal Investigations and Research. We're based out of Huntington, West Virginia, but we do pretty much cover the whole tri-state area. We just celebrated our one-year anniversary. We're all excited about that.
Happy birthday.
Yay.
Thank you.
Now, when you say tri-state, what is it, West Virginia, Virginia, Kentucky?
West Virginia, Ohio, and Kentucky.
Kentucky. Been to Waverly?
No, we haven't been to Waverly yet.
Not yet.
That's probably a question I ask everybody from that area. So, I'm glad to have you guys on. Teresa, I've been talking to you for quite a while now, actually.
Yeah.
Yep, we started a little group, the Open Mind Group, last year, and look where we've gone.
It's awesome.
It is.
Well, happy birthday. You're a year old too, right?
Getting close, yeah. Getting close next month, yep. And that's been going kind of slow, but I think it's because everybody's kind of grown a little bit in the last year, you know. And, you know, Teresa, I notice, you know, I see you a lot on the taps boards and stuff. And, mm-hmm. I've got to give you credit. You're one of the most knowledgeable people that I've seen out there, honestly.
Oh, thank you.
And, you know, I haven't had a chance to meet Steve yet, so why don't we dig into Steve first, and then I'll jump
sure.
all over you in a little bit. So, Steve, you're the tech manager.
Yes, I am.
And in your group, what consists of the duties of the tech manager?
Well, basically, my responsibility, I'm also the webmaster, so I manage the website and keep it running to the best of my ability. But my main responsibility within the group is to educate not only myself but new members and current members on the options out there as far as equipment goes to acquire the evidence or hopefully acquire the evidence that may make a difference in either A, disproving or proving that, you know, there's something out there, you know.
Yeah.
That's my main goal is to, you know, educate people on, you know, our group members on, you know, the types of software that they can use to process